Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odds. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They'd have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
All right, you can direct all hate mail to webradio@patriots.com. Inside the playbook for this Thursday, I'm sorry, I just didn't feel like jumping on the Patriot bandwagon right away. You know, Eric Scalavino, of course, from PFW, is with us for the opening hour of the program today. I don't know. It's just call it a little something-something, you know. That's all I can tell you. As I tried to explain to Andy, crossover from the last show, right? And you know, I would hope that there are some that cross over with us, you know, into this program. But for those that may not have, and you know, use this as appointment listening, which of course you should, right? You may have missed it, but I mean, the fact is that everybody's piling on picking the Patriots, and most everybody's piling on saying the Patriots will win big, just like they said the same thing about the game against Buffalo this past Monday, with the exception of one Brian Lowe. Now. My reason for being hesitant in selecting New England, as long as we're going to jump into this. And by the way, on Thursday's programs, we ask for your picks. So if you have a thought on the score as to the winner, am I way off base here? Do you agree with me? Webradio@patriots.com. What do you think the score will be?
I got to say, if you're not going to be a homer for an away game, yes. I'm fine with that. But every time they're here and you're behind that microphone in the stadium,
I think this team,
you're the biggest homer there is.
I think this team should be unbeatable at home. If you're going to be a Super Bowl contending team, you need to win them all at home. So therefore, you know, I would think that they should be favored for every game at home. You know what? You noticed.
How does it feel to wield such power, John?
Monday night, Jason, it started out great. I mean, I thought everybody, I mean, you could actually tell what they were saying. And then once we get to halftime, it just petered out again. You know? Does that have anything to do, you think, with the fact that they were down on the scoreboard?
Of course it did.
Well, you know, see, we're nothing but a bunch of front runners around here. We're nothing but a bunch of homer front runners. Homers.
Who's we?
Dope! Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, that's why I couldn't do it this week. I wanted to. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they are 2-0. Believe me, I'll be happy to, you know, wave my hand. Me. I pick the Jets next Tuesday. I'll be happy to do that.
You'll be unhappy to do it, you should say.
No, I'll be happy to say that I was wrong. Because I'm picking the Jets.
Yeah, all right.
Does that make sense now?
Yeah. No, okay. But I'm saying, but you'll be happy to say it, but you should be unhappy that you're saying it.
Yeah, well, I should be unhappy.
You have to remember, Eric,
I won't be.
On Patriots Playbook, when John says something that he's wrong on, he owns up to it on the spot. He doesn't flip-flop and try to change the story that maybe I was wrong, but maybe I was right. But when he says he's wrong, he owns it.
Doctor, airing dirty laundry.
That's because
he doesn't have the guts to do it on that show.
Well, no, it's Jason. He's known me for a while. That's good. I got to own up to it. I mean, there's no hiding it, not in this day and age. I just feel like going in, I was disappointed not only in the Patriot offense Monday night, but that missing an important cog defensively like the Patriots are going to miss in Jerod Mayo. I didn't see the kind of pass rush or the pressure until late in the game. Best rush of the night was the one that Mike Wright put on Trent Edwards, you know, late in the ball game, you know, that last drive. Unless the Patriots can somehow find a way to put that kind of pressure against a way better offensive line that the Jets have than the Bills had, I'm not sure that Mark Sanchez gets dirty the way that we want him to get dirty. I think that's the key to the game. Unless the Patriots can make Mark Sanchez play like a rookie, the Jets win this game.
Well, if he plays like he played against Houston, where he had plenty of time to throw and
Patriots,
he was picking them apart,
they lose.
Yeah, any team that allows a quarterback to pick you apart like that is going to, your chances of losing are.
And Houston allegedly has a pretty good rush defense, and I didn't see it. I did not see it at all. And like I've told you, I watched that entire game on Sunday. And I was totally and completely disappointed at the ineptness of the Houston offense, number one. I couldn't figure out if it was Houston being just really bad or if the Jets' defense is really better than advertised.
I like Sanchez. I think he's going to be a fine quarterback for the Jets. I just find it very, very difficult to believe that a rookie quarterback in his second start in the NFL is going to come in and beat a Bill Belichick Patriots team.
You're absolutely making sense, okay? It makes total sense. But then again, you know, week two, and I believe you guys all have said that week two is the toughest week
sure is.
Of the entire season to predict.
Sure is.
Because you want to think that you're starting to see a trend, but you
one
don't.
One game does not a trend
one game,
make.
Exactly. And so week two, therefore, is easily the toughest week to select.
Yep.
And because it is, I don't know that I have a good picture of the Jets. I certainly hope that we don't have a good picture of the Patriots. But because it's a home game for the Jets, because they are building up to this like it is a quote-unquote Super Bowl, because we do have, you know, Rex Ryan, you know, calling out the fans and the season ticket holders. And I mean, you know, you have to stop and think for a moment. Where the hell do they go from here if they lose? If the Jets lose, is the season over with a 1-1 record 2 weeks into the season? The way that they're building this up certainly makes it seem that way. So that's very dangerous.
Exactly.
That's very, very difficult, dangerous territory to tread upon.
See, I'm okay with saying that this is like a Super Bowl if you treated the Houston game like a Super Bowl. If you treat whoever the Jets are playing in week three like the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
If you approach every game the same way, and that approach is it's our Super Bowl,
right.
I have no problem with that. If you pick one random game in the middle of the regular season against the division opponent as your quote-unquote Super Bowl, I have a problem with that because you're treating that game more importantly than every other game on your regular season schedule.
Right.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but you need to win more games than you lose in the regular season in order to get in the playoffs to get
yes.
in the real Super Bowl.
Unless, of course, you're in the NFC West.
Right. You could, yeah, that's a good point, John.
Thank you.
That's
very
a
much.
Very good point.
Thank you. Thank you.
But in the Jets' case, if you treat every game, if Rex Ryan told his players that, gave them that same speech every week, I'd say, okay, fine. He's being consistent. Thank you, Doctor. But he's not. I don't hear him saying this about other teams. I see him being obsessed with the Patriots and Bill Belichick, and I think it's going to backfire big time on him.
Well, if you agree that you think it's going to backfire on them and that the Jets are not going to roll, that the Patriots are the ones that are going to roll in this thing, then certainly we want to hear your prediction, your score, your reason behind it that way. If you want to slam me for, you know, taking the Jets, that's fine. Slam away. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Coming up on the program, a couple of guests today. At the bottom of the hour, we're scheduled to be joined by Tim Graham. If that name doesn't sound familiar, it should, because he is the AFC East blogger for ESPN.com. And he does a great job covering the East Division. And certainly he'll be all over the Jets and Patriots matchup. And we're going to get his insights coming up at the bottom of the hour. And then the top of the following hour, our regular Thursday contributor, Russell Baxter, ESPN's NFL research coordinator, will not only touch on the Pats and the Jets, but we'll take a quick look around National Football League Week 2 with Russell Baxter in the 3 o'clock hour. We will also hear from our team conference calls today and let you hear what they have to say with members of the Patriots media. Coming up in just a little bit. This item from Mike Reese, Mike Reese's blog on ESPN Boston. He says that free agent defensive lineman Antoine Lake is scheduled to visit the Patriots Wednesday night. I'm assuming this means next Wednesday, or did it mean last night?
Last night.
Well, it was written today. It's written, you know, just a short while ago. In fact, he blogged it a short while ago.
Maybe it meant was scheduled to.
Was scheduled to?
Is that what he meant? .com.
Okay. Well, at any rate, Lake is a 6-year veteran, played for the Lions, Falcons, and Saints. Played for the Saints last year.
Never heard of him.
79 career regular season games, so he's primarily a backup option. He did visit the Patriots a few weeks ago. This is according to his agent, Andy Sims, who was quoted by Mike. He left without signing a contract, proceeded to visit the Browns, then he tweaked his hamstring during a workout. So I guess he kind of became persona non grata. Then he canceled two other workouts. It's possible the Patriots want to give him another physical after the injury. So my guess is that Antoine Lake would be, you know, stopgap measure in terms of depth in the defensive line, simply because they've got the former number 93 now wearing number 92 for the Oakland Raiders, and maybe they just want to make sure that, you know, they have a little bit more strength in there, which also leads credence to the fact that this team is prepared to go forward with a 4-3 as opposed to a 3-4 from here on out when you consider the depth at linebacker.
Maybe. I'm a little surprised that the reports we're hearing aren't about a linebacker depth.
Well, interesting that Derek Brooks had that to say, you know, earlier. We mentioned at the end of PFW in Progress today that what Brooks was quoted as saying?
He was quoted as saying he picked the Patriots in the Super Bowl. The
right.
Follow-up question was, will you be a part of that? And he goes, only time will tell.
There you go. And that was on ESPN?
ESPN.
Yeah, okay. So, and then I know this morning on DNC, on WEEI, they talked to Junior Seau in the 9 o'clock hour. And Seau, you know, said never say never, but that he probably would not entertain coming back until we got to a, you know, late November, early December scenario.
John Dennis calling.
So, wow. You know, certainly Seau is still on the radar. Brooks may be on the radar if the Patriots decide they need the extra linebacker help. My guess is if somebody else goes on the shelf for a while beyond what we've seen with Mayo, those calls will probably come a little early.
Man, if they lose another linebacker, I don't know. I don't know how much more the offense can do to support
them. Are we putting a little bit too much pressure? Are we putting a little bit too much emphasis on Adalis Thomas and his role and whether or not the Patriots have to move him inside to fill in here? Or is he capable enough, in your estimation, to shoulder this burden, so to speak, and lead this team?
He better be, considering the contract that he was given a couple of years ago. I mean, he was brought in to do 8 million different things. We were sold on how versatile this guy was and, you know, athletic and all these different things. And, you know, if that's the case, then we need to see it when push comes to shove, and with Mayo out for a while, push is coming to shove, and I don't know, we'll have to see. If they go more 4-3, then Gary Guyton, I assume, stays in the middle, AD can stay on the outside. If they go 3-4, I don't know who else they're going to put back there. If they move AD over to the side, then you have to go with, I guess, Banta Kane and Woods, or maybe Ninkovich comes in and plays a little bit on the edge rush, Burgess on the other side. There are a lot of variables, a lot of different combinations and scenarios you can put out there with this Patriots team, but I just am not overly confident with any of them at this point, John.
Who wears the green dot on the helmet Sunday?
Well, I saw when Mayo went out, it looked like Guyton assumed that dot helmet.
Okay.
From what I could see through
my
binoculars.
Not Thomas. Guyton basically
was
in
the middle. Right. And I think Thomas he did play a little bit in the middle, but I think that was just, you know, by design anyway. I don't think that had anything to do with Mayo leaving. I don't know, maybe Thomas wears it now that it's, you know, it's known that Mayo's not going to be there. But again, people in this organization have talked very highly of Gary Guyton in every discussion we've had about linebackers, so it wouldn't surprise me if he sticks with it this week.
I think we've got somebody on the phone. Rex from New York is on the phone. Is that right? Rex.
Hey, this is Rex Ryan, the head coach of the New York Jets.
What's up, Rex?
And I just wanted to let you know how much we need you this week.
Well, we'll be there.
You know, I've already admitted that, you know, hey, the Patriots have a better head coach and they got a better quarterback than us.
Yep.
But we're going to see who's got a better team. And
we do.
The thing that the other part that the reason I'm so confident is,
do you ever take a breath?
That they got to face you and they got to face the rest
of
our
playing
fans. And my challenge to you is that we need you at your best.
So I'll be at my best. Don't you worry.
That was, by the way, that was not a staged or, you know, stunt. That was a real phone call that the Jets produced to send out to their season ticket holders.
But the guy really doesn't shut up, does he?
It's a good edit.
Yeah. Pretty good at it. Not bad.
How many takes do you think that took him?
One. I think he only had time for one.
He sounds way too tired to have done that in one take.
I think that's why he sounds
so
tired.
You almost had the impression it was kind of like, oh, I got to do this. Oh,
right.
Yeah, okay, all right, fine, whatever. You know, because they definitely like to keep the PR machine rolling there.
Mm-hmm.
I really get a sense of Buddy when I listen to Rex. and I read and I hear, not only just listen to him, but when I read about him, I really get a sense that this is Buddy Ryan's kid, you know?
Yeah,
that there's a lot of similarities here.
The apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Exactly. Now, I think that also should concern Patriots fans because obviously Buddy Ryan is one of the better defensive coaches, I think, maybe in the last 20, 25 years in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, he had success in in Chicago, as we all know, from the 85-86
Super Bowl. Until I see a different one, that was the best defense in my time that I've ever seen on a football field, that 85 Bears team that the Patriots ran into.
Mm-hmm.
That was the best defensive unit I have ever seen. They were stout everywhere.
They were. And yet, I contend that if they had gotten the touchdown on that first drive of the game, the Patriots,
yeah.
Would have completely changed the complexion of that game.
I've heard a lot of Patriots fans say that. And frankly, I was rooting for the Patriots that day, and I wasn't even here yet. I was still working in San Antonio. And I remember we had a big Super Bowl party, and everybody was Bears, Bears, Bears. And I guess it's a whole NFC, AFC thing because that's NFC country with
and
the
as
Cowboys.
You are wont to do, you didn't want to jump on the bandwagon.
That's exactly right. So I took the Patriots. And, boy, by the end of the day, man, they were dancing all over me, I'll tell you.
By the end of the half.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. So. That was a long time ago. Another day, another decade. I have to admit, anything's good in terms of building up the rivalry. And we talked a little about this with Lisa Zimmerman, who writes for CBSSports.com and covers the Jets yesterday on the program. And I think she's covered the team for 10 years, as she said, and she gets it. She understands the whole New York Boston thing, and anything's good to spice it up. I guess my only problem with all of this is, and I don't really have a problem. I like it. I like adding a little spice. This is what makes the NFL fun. This is what makes it good. We've got one game to point to. We've got all week to build up to it. It's not like, you know, we're getting ready for a 3 or 4 game series with the Red Sox playing the Yankees or anything else going on. It's good, but why does it have to be week two? It's not even really allowing us to kind of like, you know, edge into the season. I just seems to me that this game would have bigger impact.
Got to get in game shape. Got to get ready, John.
Well, but I'm just saying, let's get in game shape first before we tackle these rivalries, you know? This seems to have bigger impact if we're like, you know, if you play the Jets in like week 5 or 6 and then like week 14 or 15. You know?
You know how many times?
Toward the end of the season.
Let's go back and look just for a second.
All right. You're going to go through the all-time record?
No, not the all-time record, just the last decade.
All right.
Or so.
All right.
So we're playing the Jets in the Meadowlands week 2 this year.
Yeah.
Last year, 2008, we played the Jets in the Meadowlands week 2.
Right. 2 years in a row, they've played the Jets in week 2.
2007, we opened
with the Jets.
The season at the Jets in the Meadowlands.
So it's 3 years in a row, we've played them early.
2006, our second game, week 2, at the Jets in the Meadowlands.
4 years in a row.
2005, we didn't see them until December, and we played them twice in December.
Wow. Now, that was extraordinarily – that's wrong. That was a schedule screw-up is what that was.
Yep.
But they're making up for it because 4 years in a row, we've played them inside of the first 2 weeks every year.
Right. And, let's see, 2004, we played them first in October here and then on the road in December, after Christmas.
That's actually not bad.
2003 was week 3 here
after
starting 2 games on the road in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo we started with that year.
And I think we got spanked. Yeah.
Yes, that was the 31-0 game. Then we put 31 points on Philly the following week and then played the Jets and won by 7.
Okay.
And then faced them in December. So
interesting.
2002. Week 2.
Week 2.
At the Jets in the Meadowlands.
So in the Gillette Stadium.
I'm sorry. I'm going to finish the decade real quick.
All right.
2001, home versus the Jets, week 2. And 2000, week 2, at the Jets in the Meadowlands. The NFL loves to schedule us to play the Jets
early.
In the Meadowlands
early.
week 2.
Mostly. Well, I don't know. It just seems to me that it would be easier to kind of like, you know, ease into this a little bit. That's all. I don't mind it overall. I just think it might have a little bit more impact. That's just my thought, and you know, I don't know if that swings anybody's way one way or the other. But I get the impression that man, we're kind of on guard right off the bat. Now, speaking of being on guard, Kerry Rhodes of the New York Jets, he's doing his best, I think, to stir the pot a little bit. If you haven't heard, earlier this week, Chris Jenkins of the Jets called this game the Jets Super Bowl. Yesterday, Kerry Rhodes, the Jets' free safety, said he, quote, wants to embarrass the Patriots. That's right, embarrass. Mm-hmm. I think the quote was, you go out from the first quarter on, from the first play on, and try to embarrass them. This is according to the New York Daily News. Mm-hmm. Not just go out there and try to win, try to embarrass them. Try to make them feel bad when they leave here. We don't want to just beat them. We want to send a message to them. We're not backing down from you, and we expect to win this game. And it's not going to be luck. It's not going to be a mistake. None of the guys in the locker room down the hallway here were biting on that today, were they?
Not one bit. And yesterday when the Rex Ryan quotes were bandied about and used as fodder for questions, nobody bit on those either. And they're not going to, John. And you know what? If there's going to be a game like this where there's all this hype and people talking and it's a division game and then people think it's their Super Bowl and all this, I'm glad it's the other team that's doing the talking and saying that it's their Super Bowl and not my team. I'm just not a fan of that whole. If you want to feel that way, if you want to think that way internally and amongst, you know, your locker room and your teammates, fine. If you want to say that, don't go out in public and say that kind of stuff. You're only setting yourself up for, you know, to get egg on your face at the end of it. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad the Jets are doing all this talking because, like I said, it's gonna do nothing but come back and hurt them.
Well, Rhodes said Brady will be hit far more often by the Jets' defense, which hit Texans quarterback Matt Schaub 8 times in Week 1. Of course, Brady was hit only once by the Bills' defense last week. Rhodes said, we will hit him more than 6 times, I promise you that. He insists the Jets won't play dirty, but that Brady will be vulnerable. So the quote is, I'm sure if somebody is around his leg, or he feels pressure below, he's not going to step into his throw.
I mean, again, that's just stupidity. Why do you say things like that? So you want the league office to look even closer at a game and at a particular player than they should, or than they normally would? I mean, that's
he's
foolish,
John. He's not really showing a lot of poise here, is he?
No.
No. As far as I'm concerned, keep talking. Keep yapping.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's fine with me. If the other team wants to yap all they want, go ahead. It's not going to help them any when 1 o'clock rolls around and they have to kick the ball off.
I think that's actually pretty remarkable, considering you know the track record for what happens with trash talking, you know, between players and teams. I think it's pretty interesting. Brady had responded basically by saying that talk is cheap, that the team follows the lead of our head coach. I think because we feel a certain way, we don't necessarily need to tell everybody about it. I mean,
right.
We're confident. We have as much confidence as most teams in the league. No matter what you say on a Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday, it doesn't matter much. I think our execution is what is most important, and that's what we choose to focus on. That's Tom Brady in response.
Mm-hmm. And that's the right response to have, I think. Because, you know, talking about stuff doesn't – very rarely does an athlete – go out, make predictions like that, and then go out and make it come true. So it doesn't really, I mean, and in those rare cases, yeah, it looks like a, you know, it makes the story that much more compelling that, oh, the guy went out and guaranteed this or that, or said he was going to do this and that. And, you know, like Babe Ruth pointing the bat to center field and then hitting the home run. Those kind of things are legendary and they should be few and far between.
Right.
When these things become routine everyday happenings, it diminishes what it's what something like that is supposed to be. It's supposed to be like when Joe Namath sitting by the pool in Miami made the prediction and saying he was guaranteeing they were going to beat the Colts in Super Bowl III. That was unheard of at the time. Now every year somebody on some team is guaranteeing that they're going to beat the other team, and it doesn't mean anything anymore, John.
Is it just because people just like to pop off and just say things in order to grab headlines?
It's become watered down. It's become commonplace.
So then it should still then stand to reason that it will ring, truer and mean more if somehow, some way, somebody can back that up.
Yes, it would. But in my mind, just don't. For a regular season Week 2 game, you shouldn't be saying stuff like that. This isn't the playoffs. This isn't the Super Bowl, for real. It's not.
Well, that's why I asked the question earlier. If the Jets don't win, where the heck do they go from here?
Well, they go to Week 3, and they try to win another game, and, you know, the season's not over. It's not like college football where you lose one or two games in September, and you're basically you know, looking forward to next year, there's still, you know, look at, like you said, the NFC West. You win eight games there, you probably will be the division winner.
Yeah, you could be.
You could be 7-9 and be the division winner almost in that division. But in the AFC East, it's different. You know, their season's not going to be over if they lose this game. But it's not a good direction for Rex Ryan to be taking his team in. If you go out and hype them up for a game, just a regular season game.
If you listen to the players, though, I mean, they seem to have bought really well into what Rex Ryan is selling them.
Sure.
And they like it. And sure. The fact that he had a really good pregame speech before the game against Houston this last week and a postgame. And, I mean, the players were all apparently really, really liking what they heard. I don't know what he said. Obviously, whoever was inside that locker room is privy to what was said. But he sold them a bill of goods, and they're buying into it. So maybe this is sort of
trying to give his team a psychological advantage.
Yes, maybe this is coach incited here. Maybe this is part of the madness behind the theory here of it all. Who knows? Tim Graham covers the AFC East as the blogger for ESPN.com, and Tim joins us here inside the playbook. Tim, thanks so much for taking a little bit of time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I'm flattered.
We've been talking about, you know, Rex Ryan and his, you know, I guess, blustery words, and obviously what Kerry Rhodes has had to say and the Patriots' relative non-reaction to it all. Do you get the sense that maybe what Rex is just trying to do is gain a little bit of at least psychological momentum, if nothing else, for his side?
I'm not so sure that he really thinks it through that much. I don't know that this is a master plan. I think, you know, like he has said many, many times throughout the preseason training camp, going back to even when he made the comments about you know, getting to meet the president within the next couple of years, obviously a suggestion that they plan on winning the Super Bowl right away. Uh-huh. He's just saying that he's just being himself. He's having fun. He's a gregarious personality. I think a lot of it comes from being a twin brother and his brother being in the game. I think he was just kind of raised with the back and forth that there's maybe some trash talking within the family, his father, the whole thing. I think it's just kind of the way he is.
Yeah.
And he also knows that his players feed off of that. And he became a very vocal part of that coaching staff in Baltimore even before he was defensive coordinator. And I think it's his way of telling his players, I believe in you. I don't think he's really sending a message to the New England Patriots at all. I think he's just telling his players that I'm with you. I know you can win. Not only can I know you can win, you can dominate. And especially from a defensive player standpoint, that's what they want to hear. And he's just that type of guy that gets his players. It's not just enough to get your players to want to play for you. Dick Geron's players want to play for him. He's also known as a player's coach. There are a lot of player's coaches. Herm Edwards was another one of those guys. That doesn't necessarily mean the guy's going to go through a wall for you.
And
but
doesn't necessarily
there,
mean they can play.
And they want to do well for you. Rex Ryan's guys take it up to a total. And a lot of that has to do with the things that he says about them and heading into a game and what he expects.
Right. You know, and of course, along those same lines now, while I tend to agree with you, I think, and we got through saying just a couple of moments ago, Tim, before you joined us, that, you know, Rex really reminds me of Buddy in a lot of ways, and that obviously the apple hasn't fallen far from the tree thus far. So if that's the case, then sure, this is probably a lot of bluster, but you know, if you're going to try to break, you know, a perceived dominance, whether it's really dominance or not, in the Jets' mind, I guess they perceive the Patriots to be the king of the hill. And so if you're going to knock the king off, you obviously have to be able to talk the game, a good game, as well as back it up with physical play. And I guess they feel like this is their way to go about showing that they're not scared.
He's rallying the troops.
Yes.
And in regard to the comparison to Buddy, you have to say that Rex is a lot more refined than Buddy was. Buddy was very coarse, and Rex does it with kind of a sense of humor. He's thumbing his nose at the Patriots, but he's doing it in kind of a good-natured way, whereas Buddy Ryan just seemed nasty. He did it to his own coaches on his own staff, his own players. He seemed to be a little more nasty about it. Rex Ryan seems to be coming from a much happier place.
Well, that may be the case, Tim, but I don't know if this team takes it that way. I think they take the words literally and take the intent literally. I don't think they're
they should.
Yeah, and so I think Rex's reverse psychology may be reversed on himself, because I think, you know, he may come out and try to be sort of jovial about it. But if the Patriots take it the other way and use it even more to their advantage, that's sort of that kind of defeats the purpose of what Rex is trying to do for his team, don't you think?
That's right. I did a piece on that, in fact, yesterday on ESPN.com about mm-hmm. bulletin board material. And I used what Rex Ryan said about Bill Belichick and not kissing the rings
right.
as kind of the basis for that, but had a chance to speak to a lot of guys just about the concept of bulletin board material, whether it works, how coaches use it, you know, just some broad strokes, but the art of it, you know, how you show some restraint from giving the other team bulletin board material while also using what they give you to your advantage. And you know what? It really has nothing to do with what is said. It is how it's presented in your locker room. So a guy could say something totally innocuous in Orchard Park, New York, or Glendale, Arizona, or wherever training camps are, Davie, Florida, and Bill Belichick will find a way to put it in a certain context to get his players worked up. Now, that doesn't mean that Belichick's, you know, lying or, you know, doing anything that is unethical. These are devices that a coach will use, and some guys just need that little extra. Some guys find the routine of the NFL, the weekly, daily grind, just gets to be very routine. You find yourself getting into a certain mindset, you know, especially later in the season. And these are the types of things that snap the guys out of it. And it's a device that's used in all 32 locker rooms. Well, there is a bulletin board. There is an actual bulletin board. It's not some mythological thing that's out there. And whether it be in the meeting room, on the bulletin board, among the training staff, whatever, players will be informed of what is being said about them. And it's presented in such a way that you should be offended by this and use it on Sunday to shut them up.
Along those lines, though,
sure.
What Kerry Rhodes has said over the last 24 hours or so, is that just bulletin board material, or is that psychological ploy, or is he just dumb?
That's bulletin board material, especially from a writer standpoint. I had to think that Gary Myers, when he was talking to Kerry Rhodes yesterday, probably couldn't wipe the smile off his face with the gold that he was giving him there.
Right.
That is maybe taking it to another level. You know, Rex Ryan's doing, he's taking some thinly veiled swipes, being playful with it. You know, Kerry Rhodes, that was just bravado. That's bluster. That is like Joey Porter type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There are some players out there that need to say these things, I think, to get themselves a little jacked up. He's not saying it for the benefit of his teammates or necessarily to go after the Patriots. I think he's just saying that as a player who's supremely confident in his abilities and pretty much stating, we are going to go out and do this on Sunday. We're telling you about it right now, and there's nothing you could do to stop us. So that's the mentality. That's where Rex Ryan's message comes in, because it's now the player's message, and they are following right in line with their head coach. It's the type of thing that it might help them for a little while, but you have to wonder, you know, how long can they feed off this type of thing, and does it eventually catch up to you?
What's your opinion on this, Tim? If a player, you mentioned Joey Porter, let's use him as an example. A player like him comes out and says ridiculous things about how, you know, how badly his team is going to beat another team and how well he's going to play against another quarterback or whatever, and goes out and does it. Does he look more? Does he look more like a hero for saying that and making it come true, or more? Is it worse for him to say something like that and then to come out and fall flat on his face?
Oh, yeah, it's worse to not succeed, obviously. There's really not much to gain if you go out there and back it up. So you backed it up. People are going to look at what you did on the field. They're not necessarily going to remember, oh, well, Joey Porter said he was going to take it to Matt Castle, you know, 3 days before the game. I mean, that was a big storyline last year, you know, that Matt Castle's just a rookie. And everybody was chuckling that, you know, the 0-2 Patriots were going up against, you know, the 0-2 Dolphins were going up against the Patriots, who'd won however many straight regular season games. And, you know, Joey Porter's obviously a moron for saying these things. Mm. And then he went out and did it. But nobody necessarily remembers that Joey Porter was popping off before the game. They just remember the wildcat. They remember the expression on Bill Belichick's face when the camera was showing him
right. And
the Dolphins are running all over the place. And,
right. You
know, that's what people remember. They're not going to remember what you said before the game. So there's not necessarily much to gain from it. But Joey Porter, for some reason, needed to say those things to get him a little more worked up for the game, and maybe he was able to use that, and maybe it worked. You know, maybe in his case it worked. So the guys use different things to get themselves an edge on Sunday, and trash talking is a big part of it.
The reason it came to mind was, obviously, you covered the AFC East. You know about the whole Richard Seymour thing and how big a story that was here. You probably saw the quotes when he got to Oakland finally after about a week. He said something to the effect of, yeah, I'll be out there on Monday night. You'll see me. I'll be the guy on top of the quarterback. And that struck me as a little strange because normally, you know, we're used to seeing him here where that kind of thing is uncalled for in this locker room in Gillette Stadium. So you don't ever hear Seymour talking in that way. His first opportunity outside the organization, he not only said the words.
Unleash the hounds!
He actually went and did it, though, which took me a little bit by surprise because I was expecting him, you know, knowing Richard the way we do, I pictured him saying that with a little bit of a smile on his face and sort of laughing and chuckling about it. And I didn't really expect him to come out and have much of an impact in the game because he had just gotten there 2 days earlier. But he came out and he had, what, two sacks? Or he had a significant impact on the game. And that is one example of a player saying something, backing it up, and that's going to stick with me. I'm going to remember that about Seymour.
Joe Namath. You know, there are a lot of instances where it actually was the story. But I think that's pretty rare. I mean, you're coming at it, like you said, from a different perspective. I think among New England Patriots fans, that's something that you took notice. I think from a national standpoint, though, Richard Seymour's comments before the game probably weren't even picked up on that much, and they just saw a guy who showed up, essentially dropped his suitcase off at his locker, threw on his jersey, and went out there and had a great game. But yeah, you know, maybe that's a case where Richard Seymour needed to, you know, maybe make a statement to get him into the game, to think, you know, hey, look, you know, this is for real now. I can't sit around and mope and wonder, you know, what just happened to me now that I've been traded from one coast to the other, from a Super Bowl contender to one of the worst franchises in the league. I need to get motivated here and maybe said some things just to, you know, get his gears going a little bit.
Tim Graham covers the AFC East for ESPN.com. He blogs regularly on the website concerning all the teams that are in the division. What are your thoughts on Rex Ryan's defense being imported from Baltimore, and how does he make this the Jets defense? And does he need to make it the Jets defense? Is it okay, in other words, I guess, to have a copycat of the Ravens defense?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what he's trying to do. He had everything just the way he wanted it in Baltimore. That was his defense. And in many ways, it was his team, even though, you know, he wasn't the head coach. You know, he had been there and had been, you know, through, you know, a couple of coaching tenures there. And, you know, those players, especially on defense, really went to him rather than John Harbaugh. In many different types of, you know, ways, however you want to look at it. He had it everything just the way he wanted it. There was no need for him to think, boy, if I had, you know, the ability to run my own team, I could do it this way or make it this way. Mm-hmm. No, he went to the Jets and said, okay, look, this is the blueprint I want. Let's import it. And that's why he went out and got Bart Scott. He got Jim Leonard, guys who the system, know what's expected, guys who can communicate that to their new teammates and help that transition. So he went out and he was able to get some pieces. He could get Lito Shepard. You know, they specifically targeted him. Jim Leonard and Bart Scott, of course, I mentioned.
Right.
You know, and then there were some pieces that were already in place, Darrell Revis and Kerry Rhodes and Sean Ellis and Calvin Pace and, you know, David Harris. There's some very – Chris Jenkins, of course. I mean, I think I've just named off darn near the entire starting lineup for their defense, and those are some great players in there. And so I think that if he can it looks like he's already on his way. That game on Sunday against the Texans was very impressive for two reasons.
It was.
One, it was an incredible feat to be able to do what they did without two of their best players. Two playmaking defenders were not on the field for them, and Sean Ellis and Calvin Pace. And the fact that they were able to do it against a very respectable offense. You know, the Houston Texans, you know, a lot of people look at them as a woebegone franchise that hasn't made the playoffs, but they have some weapons on offense. And they were able to pretty much shut out Andre Johnson and Steve Slayton and make Matt Schaub, who always seems to play very well at home, look like he was nowhere near Reliance Stadium. And they darn near knocked him out of it.
I thought that one of the best moves made by any team in the division in the offseason was the Jets bringing in Bart Scott. I think he's vastly underrated as a linebacker. Loved him in Baltimore. And I think he will be a real weapon for the Jets. Number two, obviously bringing Mike Pettine as defensive coordinator from Baltimore with him to New York sort of solidifies the fact that, yeah, what you're going to see basically is a Ravens North type of philosophy.
Yeah, for sure. And the thing about Bart Scott, obviously Pettine is key to the whole thing. You know, when it comes to installing your defense, you need the guy who's on the field, who's in the locker room, to be able to translate, okay, this is what we did under Eric Mangini, or this is what we're trying to do here. This is what you guys need to pick up on. This is what's important. And that was Bart Scott. So I think from a communication standpoint, equally as much as from a playing standpoint, that was a huge signing for them. And sure. I think Jim Leonard to a lesser degree. He's the type of guy who you need to have on your team, that gritty overachiever. But he's also there for a communications perspective. He's in the secondary helping Kerry Rhodes out with those calls and just helping these guys get the concept, because the Baltimore Ravens defense was very conceptual. There's not a lot of, you know, stuff that you can just go over in the film room or in the meeting room and say this is how it's going to be. It's when you come to the line, it's making all these various reads and knowing exactly what the concept of the defense is, what you're trying, what the objective of this defense is, not right. necessarily, okay, A plus B equals C. It is much more, there's a little bit more of an art to it with the Rex Ryan defense. So helping these guys pick up on those little things, it was very important. So, you know, Bart Scott and Jim Leonard, very critical to that defense.
Tim, before we let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you your thoughts on Mark Sanchez's debut against Houston, number one. And number two, where the intrigue comes from in your estimation as a rookie quarterback gets to face a Bill Belichick coached defense for the first time?
Yeah, I think that, you know, obviously you always want to think of the Patriots and you think of a Bill Belichick defense, but, you know, some of that luster's off this Patriots defense right now. Obviously, with the changes that happened over the offseason, the Richard Seymour trade and then the Jerod Mayo injury, I'm not as really enraptured by that storyline as I think I might normally be. I was really impressed by Mark Sanchez. He played much better than I thought he would on the road. NFL debut. He looked cool. He looked like he'd been playing the game, like he was a third or fourth year quarterback out there. And he made the one mistake that ended up being a touchdown for the Texans, the only points that they scored on the day. You know, the Texans have some good players. You know, I think that, you know, they tried to rattle him, I'm sure. I'm sure Bill Belichick's going to try to rattle him too. But, you know, I don't necessarily see that as the huge matchup. I think it's going to be more New England's offense against the Jets' defense is going to decide this game. And I think that if the Patriots are able to spread out their offense, which is the best way to beat a 3-4 attacking defense, maybe we'll even see Julian Edelman and Wes Welker on the field at the same time on Sunday, then I think that it could get very interesting.
Certainly, it will be interesting, and it usually is when the Jets play the Patriots. Tim Graham, again, who blogs on ESPN.com about all things AFC East, joining us here inside the playbook. Tim, it's great to visit with you. Thank you, and I hope we can do it again sometime soon.
Oh, anytime. Just give me a ring. Happy to do it.
Great. Thank you very much.
Take care.
So take care, guys.
Catch Tim's stuff on ESPN.com as he blogs about the AFC East. I enjoy his blog. I mean, I'm not just being self-serving here. I think that what he does is he manages to plug himself into, you know, beat guys and, you know, in each of the cities where the AFC East is. He certainly has a good relationship. In fact, I believe Tim himself is a former beat guy within the AFC East. So that being said, you know, pretty thorough stuff right there. Mm-hmm. You got it kind of covered between PFW, and you've got Tim Graham on ESPN.com. You got Mike Reese on ESPNBoston.com. You know, there's some good information that's out there.
And the information guy, the numbers guy from ESPN, is coming up in a few minutes.
Yeah, Russell is about 10
Russell
minutes
Baxter.
Away.
Russell Baxter.
Yes, Tim Graham was actually, he covered the Dolphins for the Palm Beach Post before he joined ESPN. So,
Yoo-hoo! Baxter!
He's coming up in 10 minutes. In the meantime, there's plenty of time for you to contribute to the program. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. A couple of emails here quickly. Stripper says, John, quick prediction from you. Texas Tech at Texas.
Oh, come on. You're not going to pick Texas?
I'll say about...
He's not picking the Patriots. So.
Yeah, but that's Texas, true. He's from Texas.
Yeah, but listen, let me tell you something. That loss last year is sitting with has sat with the Longhorns for a whole year now. So I'm going to say, how does 48 to 31 sound? Stripper send you that?
He's an Hey, John, have you seen the ESPN College Game Day promo with Mac Brown and the
I have
crew?
Not seen it yet, no.
Have you heard about it?
No.
Where they're singing the Texas Fight song.
Are they really?
And
oh, I missed
and,
that!
And Herb Street, they're all wearing cowboy hats and boots, and they're singing the song, and then all of a sudden Herb Street starts freestyling, and Mac Brown just gives him a tongue lashing for it. It's pretty funny. See if you can... see, you have internet over there, John?
Yeah.
During the breaks,
yeah, I'll
YouTube
see if I can find
and
it.
See if you can find it. All yeah. Right. Okay. It'd be worth it. You'll appreciate it.
All right.
Do you guys have do your Longhorns have the week off?
When,
this
last week?
Who did they play last week?
They went to Wyoming.
That was last week? Okay, yeah. I can remember if that was the week before.
I thought you were like, you know, being sarcastic. They actually...
couldn't remember if that was the opening weekend or last weekend.
Wyoming's field is the highest elevation in all of Division I football.
Yeah.
7,200 feet above sea level. So that's obviously a difficult place to play. And they struggled in the first half. It was 13-10 at halftime.
It looked like an interesting game.
Well, they finally got it. It was an interesting game because, you know, Wyoming's playing with emotion. I mean, they were billing that game in Laramie as the biggest game of all time in Wyoming football history at home. It was
the highest ranked, gone there.
It was the highest ranked opponent that had ever gone into Laramie. So, you know, number one, you might be thinking, well, why would they do that? But number two, I'd give Texas credit for going on the road and playing a game like that.
I do too.
That's a no win scenario.
I do too. Yeah, because if you go in and you beat them up, you beat up a power puff. If you go in and lose, it's considered a monumental upset.
Exactly.
So I think more college teams should do that, though. They should take the risk and play good teams or play...
And I'm sure that Wyoming and the Mountain West Conference in particular were happy for that because Mountain West has a chance to pluck off a team, and the Mountain West is making noise like, you know, hey, we belong at the BCS table. I won't disagree that their top three are as strong as, you know, the top three probably in the Big East or the ACC as it now stands, but the bottom half of the Mountain West is just weak beyond... You know they've got to get they've got to get strong top to bottom 1-8 1-9 whatever it is in that league 1-8, and with the bottom part of those of that league comes up and catches up a little bit, that's when they'll be BCS worthy. So that's
I just don't like seeing these College of the South versus Florida type games.
Well, you also have I realize that, and I think most college fans don't. But again, those are huge paydays for those FCS teams. Huge paydays that can make or break maybe their entire athletic budget for an entire year. I mean, for instance, Louisiana Monroe. I think we even mentioned this last week at some point when they went in and played Texas. You know, 2 weeks ago, they got paid $900,000 for one game.
Sure. I mean, you're not gonna
bend
turn
over,
it down,
grab your ankles. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Wow. Mark Tape. Talk. Jeez.
That was kind of testy, huh?
That's what it was. So you know, and here's your $900,000 paycheck.
The game is in Austin this week?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because last year was the Crabtree catch at the end.
Yeah,
right?
Thank you for reminding me. I've only seen it 80 million times already on TV this week. But, of course, the actual play of the game was actually not Crabtree's catch and then break of the tackle and spin in the end zone. It was one play before that. Do you remember what happened?
No, I don't.
It was freshman Blake Gideon dropping an interception. Hit him right in the numbers. Right in the numbers. Right between the two and the one. And he dropped it. If he had made that pick, Texas would have run out the clock, 133-32, or whatever it was. I don't remember what the score was.
Well,
and would have won the Big 12 South, would have no doubt, you know, destroyed Missouri in the Big 12 Championship, and would have played Florida for the National Championship last year.
Well, the problem is, John, he was trying to catch with the two and the one instead of his two hands.
Probably.
If he had done that, the game would have been over.
I know. Well, what are you going to do? He was a freshman, so it's kind of tough to beat up on a freshman. Although we tried. But, you know, I think as long as, you know, Texas elicits a little bit of revenge, and I think they'll probably take care of business this week. But you know what? Stranger things have happened. That's why they play the game, right? And that's why they got to play this game on Sunday at the Meadowlands. Mm-hmm. I'm just not feeling as confident about it as I would like to feel at this stage of the game. Let me see if I can get a couple of questions in here before we break and then get to Russell. This is for Dear John and the Gang. I guess that's you.
We are a gang?
were a game. Andrew in Tacoma Park, Maryland says, fair point in reference to the lack of pressure in the first half of the game, but remember that in the fourth quarter against the Bills of the D-line, the D-line rallied as well as Woods, et cetera, in the linebacking core and got true solid pressure against Edwards. Lest we forget that Wilfork sacked Edwards midway through the third quarter but got it called back on that ridiculous penalty. In any case, I think Brady has found his stride back, as well as the rest of the team. This game, we will see the Brady-Moss connection of old with at least one return for touchdown. Andrew says Patriots 35-24. Much love to my favorite radio show. Thank you, Andrew.
Actually, the Wilfork play was not a sack because Edwards released the ball and he tackled him.
Yes.
And as he did, Edwards got rid of the ball.
Yeah.
So I think it would have been an incomplete pass, but they flagged him for roughing the pass.
It was an incomplete pass, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
It wasn't a sack, because if he had sacked him in the end zone and there was no flag, it would have been
safe.
2 points.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
But I see the emailer's point.
Yes.
It's, you know, you got pressure on the quarterback and it forced him to throw an incomplete pass. He just kind of threw it away. But yeah. And, you know, another thing that we sort of overlooked in this game was, yeah, you know, we got caught up in the Watson catching the two touchdowns at the end, but when the Patriots needed to, they sacked Edwards at the end. I mean, they were only down by a point, the Bills, when they got the ball back. They could have tried to move in position to kick a field goal and win the game.
Mm-hmm.
New England needed to get pressure and force Edwards into bad decisions, and they did.
Right.
They could, you know, it was a little tenuous there for a minute or so, thinking that, well, potentially the Bills only need to get about 30 yards to get into field goal range.
Very tenuous. Yeah.
And Ryan Lindell's more than capable of hitting a 50-plus yard field goal to win it. So they needed to get a couple of sacks in there, and they did. And I think that sort of got overlooked in the whole euphoria of Watson and Brady in the last 5 minutes of the game. But the defense, especially the front seven, came up big when they needed to at the very end. When the most pressure was on them to perform.
I just would like to see that sustained a little bit this next week and be able to, you know, flush Sanchez out of the pocket. Christina, New Jersey, I can't believe I got some voice message forwarded to me from a friend, Jets fan. Rex Ryan had a message recorded, sent to all the season ticket holders, and, yeah, we heard it. He says, give me a break. Doesn't he have some game planning to do? You think Jets fans are saying that?
I think there are enough smart Jets fans to be concerned about it. Yeah, I do. I'm sure there are some of them who love it because, you know, just like there would be Patriots fans who might love that.
You
kind of
lying your ass off.
Smart Jets fans.
I'm giving them some credit. I know some people from Jersey.
RJ in Vegas says, "I'm not listening now because I'm a podcaster, but I hope Paula and Andrea are a little more upbeat today." What was that in reference to? Did I miss that? Was that a PFW thing?
I think they're, yeah, he's making a slam at
the... Yeah, okay. Yes, exactly. The two boys, or girls, as some they sound like. Okay, he says, so who the hell is the guy of the Belichick interviews asking questions like, have you ever actually had someone kiss your rings? Or what can you do to schematically combat the blitzing of the Jets? He says, I know it's the same dum-dum. Can he really not know how this all works?
I know who he's talking about, and he's new to the beat this year.
And you're not going to throw him under the rug.
I'm not going to throw him under the bus, even though you know, the reader might want me to, the emailer might want me to. I'm not going to sell out a.
You should do it.
I won't do it. Well, I know who he is, though.
Eric. See, you know, Eric is a, you know, he's a good guy.
No, it has nothing to do with that, jackass.
Wow.
Hey, President Obama can say it. I'm going to say it on this show.
He's okay. A jackass.
That's right.
That's right.
I finally agree with the president on something.
Let's see. Brad says, greetings from Maryland's number one Pats fan who grew up in Maine. While Brady and the receivers looked a little out of sync in the first half, he finished with 59% completion percentage for the first half, including three blatant drops. That's true. The problem comes from the fact that he was 26-31 in the second half. Most NFL quarterbacks would kill to have a 59% completion percentage. I think Brady's second half firestorm made the first half look that much worse. The fact is that Schoble made a great play on the INT for touchdown, and Maroney's fourth down tippy toe 2 yard loss in fourth and inches made the first half look worse than it was. I'm not saying that there isn't room for improvement, but I don't doubt Brady throws another pick six the rest of the year. And I hope that Ben Jarvis or Morris can handle the rest of the fourth down attempts, please. Can't wait to see Sunday's game. He says 34-16 Pats.
I'll take it.
Okay.
I'll take it.
So far, it's been 35-24 and 34-16.
I said
so everybody, and you said what?
32-10.
God. Wow. So everybody. Rookie
quarterback, John, against the Belichick team.
Nobody thinks like I do. Nobody's thinking like I do. I'm thinking, you want my score? Do you want me to give you
yes.
my score right now?
Yes.
Right, before we break here and go
yes.
to Russell? All right. Well, I'm going to stay true to form then. I came in here thinking that I think that.
You said the Jets would win the game.
The Jets would win the game. So I'm going to take New York's going to win it.
8.
Bills really.
8-7. No, I'm going to say 27-24. Jets, 27-24.
Okay. All right. Is Jay Feely going to win it?
You know something? You suck.
Yeah, thank you. I'd say that.
Is it going to come down to that?
I'd say it could. I'd say very well could come down to that. That the Patriots certainly will. It'll be a good game. There'll be a lot of emotion. Might even be an ejection or two. Who knows? But I don't know. I don't have the feeling in my gut okay. that I want to have about this game.
All right.
So I'm going to say Jets 27-24. And if you want to slam me, go right ahead. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's our phone number. All right, let's get the timeout in here on the other side as we thank Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly, as always. And we'll see you next week again, correct?
That's right.
Yes, we will. Then we'll come back with Russell Baxter, ESPN's NFL Research Coordinator, as we take our look around the NFL for Week 2.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush. But you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains.
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football, bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game, 5 yards, first down.
But you're not...
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A. Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2009. Bank of America Corporation.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football. 3 Super Bowl championships. Endless memories.
It's good! It's good! Terry!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Jets and the Pats coming up Saturday afternoon at the Meadowlands in East Rutherford, New Jersey. And to talk about that, as well as the rest of the action of note and of interest to us, in Week 2 around the NFL is our friend Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, joining us here once again inside the playbook. Good afternoon, Russell.
Hello there, John. How are you?
Great. Great. How's everything going in beautiful, bucolic Bristol?
We're a little rain, but... A little rainy, but all good. All good. Looking forward to who's going to come out of here 2-0 and who's going to be sitting 0-2?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. That's a great question. Any thoughts right off the bat? Just what are you left with that stands out from the opening week of the NFL that you didn't really expect?
Let's see, what I didn't really expect. I don't, you know, it's hard, and it's hard to put a grasp on it, because what I thought was interesting is the teams that we thought were going to be good managed to find ways to win, and not necessarily in the prettiest sense. You know, Pittsburgh, right. Indianapolis, right. San Diego, New England, all the powerhouses, supposedly the AFC. Overtime, 2 points, 1 point, 4 points, and all, you know, for the, except for Indianapolis, who had to make a late stand, pretty much late. And it was just interesting, but it shows you in this league that, you know, and Mike Tomlin says all the time about style points, Pittsburgh Steelers coach, doesn't matter. Finding the ways to win. And it wasn't necessarily that the teams found ways to lose, although you could debate what happened up in New England last Monday night with the McKelvin play. Sure. I'm sure we'll talk about that.
Sure.
But it was just the ability of, you know, you throw Aaron Rodgers in there as well. He got so much heat last year for not winning close games. Of course, when you have a defense like he did last year, you know, what are you supposed to do?
Right.
But I just found it interesting that teams who knew how to win found a way to win.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think most everybody expects, you know, the teams that are supposed to be good follow that mantra, you know, that you know, they right. find a way to win, and obviously that was the case where the Patriots are concerned. How did you feel about the Jets and the way that they played in the opening week against the Texans? Weren't you at least a little bit surprised?
Yeah, I think I was more surprised on the end of the Texans looking so stupefied, as if they weren't prepared more for anything else. I mean, they obviously knew this was a new staff and all that. But, you know, Houston really looked out of sorts, and you had to be impressed with the aggressiveness of the Jets, you know, game in, you know, play in and play out. Right. I thought that was the thing that stood out the most to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was almost like after, you know, I think Houston comes in with high expectations this year, not overly high, but high enough to maybe make a playoff run. And you turn around, and all of a sudden they're non-competitive. I mean, they're only touched it. Their offense didn't score a touchdown.
Right.
You know, and this is a team that last year is among the better teams, finished hot, 5-1 in the last six games, and they looked completely disheveled, to be honest with you.
They did. They did. I was very much disappointed. That was a game that I managed to watch most of, if not every, almost every minute of. I had that free preview thing going on DirecTV, so I was thrilled. And I don't get a chance to watch what you do every week, just usually because I'm focused on one game.
Well, I just get to watch Boomer and Tommy and all them just eat, you know.
That must be a show.
That's
a show in itself, right?
don't take that. No, you haven't. Well, John, you know me well enough. You know, the only reason I don't watch more people eating is because I'm shoving it in. But no, I mean, I'm just kidding it on. But no, we get to see, obviously, all the games going on and so on.
Right.
And, yeah, but I think I was more disappointed in Houston than I was impressed with the Jets, if that makes any sense.
Right. Okay. Well, let's take a look then at a couple of the key games that we're going to follow this week. You mentioned the avoidance of trying to start 0-2. What's significant about starting a season 0-2, and is it the death knell that some people think it is?
Well, it's not a death knell, but it certainly has you with one foot in. I mean, let's not forget the 0-1 Patriots and the 0-7 Giants both started 0-2 and won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Last year, three teams who were 0-1. In fact, last year, six teams that were 2-0 made the playoffs, but three teams that were 0-2 made the playoffs. Miami, Minnesota, and San Diego all opened 0-2 and all managed to make the playoffs.
How about that? Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's certainly not a death knell. Did any of them want to play? Okay, no, but it's not what it used to be. For a long time, 0-2 was crippling, and the percentages are not good. The percentage is even worse at 0-3, but, you know, a handful of teams at 0-3 have made it. Remember, the 92 Chargers were actually 0-4.
Yep, I remember that.
And won the AFC West this year, right. That year in 1992. So mm-hmm. Not impossible. You know, it's become such a streaky league, and, you know, about the midway point of the season, you can always tell that somebody's going to come out of nowhere and somebody we thought was good was going to fade. Last year, you know, the Texans had a weak start and finished strong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, San Diego sitting 4-8 and made it at 8-8. Minnesota was 5-5 and went 5-1 in the last six games. And then on the other hand, you had teams like Dallas and Denver who started out 3-0 and both missed. And you had Washington, who was 6-2, and then went 2-6 and missed the rest of the way.
Right, very true. Buccaneers playing the Bills, home opener for Buffalo. We obviously got an eyeful and even an earful with Buffalo. Both teams 0-1. It's a 4 o'clock Eastern time game on Sunday. Were you impressed with the Bills at all in the way that they played? Were you surprised?
I was impressed with the way they controlled the ball. Their game plan was obviously to use the backs and the tight ends. I know Terrell Owens has gotten so much flack, and you know he doesn't do himself any favors with some of the ways he words things. But if you go back and look, I mean they only targeted, you can now gauge targets in the NFL, and 15 of, I should say 15 of his pass attempts. Went to tight ends and running backs. 10 went to the wide receivers. Mm-hmm. And what did they score on? They scored on Fred Jackson killed them underneath, and so did the tight end as well. So, I mean, that's how they were attacking New England. New England's relatively inexperienced in the back nine, or is it the back eight, or in some cases, you never know with Bill Belichick what he'll line up with. But, I mean, they're relatively inexperienced. They lost Gerard Mayo during the game. I thought that was the right way to attack them. The thing that was unfortunate about Leota's McKelvin and how you knew it was a bad play is because as much as he fumbled, and obviously that was not good, if you remember when he fielded the kickoff in the end zone, he hesitated to begin with.
Right.
So he was not 100% sure that was the right move to begin with. And I think once you start running with some uncertainty, you're almost asking to cough up the football.
Yeah, I thought he was put in a very, very difficult situation, and obviously the vandalism that happened thereafter, and
well,
this is kind of a sad story. But, I thought that really, that was a gift that the Patriots certainly didn't expect. I think Buffalo probably goes on to win that game if McKelvin doesn't fumble. But I also think that Buffalo had an opportunity to put the game away a little bit, and McKelvin was probably an unnecessary goat.
Well, I agree with that. Like I said, usually takes more than one play. I mean, it's funny how you can conveniently pick out one play and make that person go. New England still had to drive down for a touchdown. Okay, it mm-hmm. wasn't like they were down by three.
Well,
and
exactly.
They could get in a field goal range.
Yeah, exactly. Buffalo had a chance. Touchdown. Yeah, Buffalo had the opportunity to stop them.
Right, and basically scored the touchdown on the same play that they scored the touchdown before that.
Right.
So it's the old Burt Reynolds to Ray Nitschke, you know how that works. It worked once, it'll work again.
Right.
We don't need to go into details on that.
Okay.
There's a lot that goes into it. It's so easy to just point the finger and so on. But I think the problem began not so much with the fumble, but obviously he was hesitant coming out. And again, this is a kid who was a very good kickoff returner last year. And it was pointed out to me by someone that, this is also where the one thing about Bill Belichick that you have to love is situational football. He talks about it all the time. Yeah, I love hearing the film clips where he'll walk up to a player randomly and say, okay, what are we doing here? What do we do in this situation? What do we do in that situation?
Right.
I'm just wondering if anybody took second-year kickoff returner Leota McKelvin aside and said, if that ball is kicked in the end zone, I want you to drop down on the knee.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering if any coach did that.
I'm guessing no.
Well, because, and I'm guessing no, too, and that's why I don't think, if he knew what he was supposed to do, in turn, and again, I'm not blaming anybody in particular, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But if you are told by your coaches that if the ball is kicked in the end zone, you're supposed to get down on the knee,
yeah.
There is no hesitation.
Right.
He obviously hesitated for a reason because he wasn't sure what he was going to do.
Right, right. Well, that, of course, was last Monday night. This Monday night's game, let's jump ahead a little bit because that's where the Miami Dolphins will be taking on the Indianapolis Colts in the ESPN Monday night game. And the Dolphins trying also to avoid 0-2 against a Colts team that might be considering themselves a little fortunate to have won last week against Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, the Jaguars always give them problems.
They do.
Usually give them problems in Indianapolis a lot, even so more sure than Jacksonville. But they found a way to win the game. I think they snuck one out, and I'm sure it had to make Jim Caldwell very, very happy. I'm sure he's not very happy about losing Anthony Gonzalez for, it looks like, relatively 2 months. Puts them down a weapon. It's still a team in Indianapolis that's offensive-oriented. I mean, they're a bend-but-don't-break defense, but right now they're already down a key defensive player in Bob Sanders as well. But I'm sure they will take eking out wins, especially divisional wins, you know, even if it's by 1 point, listen, you go undefeated and your point differential would be plus 16, mm-hmm. as we well know. So you had to be impressed with their ability to make timely plays. And remember, Jacksonville, even though they were 5-11 team last year, John, did beat Indy last year, mm-hmm. early in the season. Listen, the Colts bring a lot of balance on both sides of the ball. Again, they're the bend but don't break. They know how to move the football. They find different ways to move the football. It's a pretty good Miami defense that they're going to play against. But offensively, I'm not sure what is happening. Remember last year in a regular season, 13 turnovers by the Dolphins, which the Giants did the same thing, and they both set an NFL record for fewest turnovers in a 16-game season with 13.
Mm-hmm.
Counting the playoff game with the Ravens last year and last week against Atlanta, Miami's turned over the ball 9 times the last 2 times they've played.
Yikes. Yeah, that's out of character. But you also mentioned earlier that, you know, Miami started 0-2 last year and ended up getting into the playoffs, so 0-2 is not necessarily the death knell for them if they lose.
No, and remember, and their 0-2 was they lost to the Jets and Brett Favre. They got blown out at Arizona and all of a sudden came up to New England where it looked like they were going to be in trouble. The Wildcat was born. And that kind of got them never headed. But, you know, if they're going to continue to turn over the football with this kind of regularity, they were a team that played on a fine line last year, and they could be a better football team this year, but they might not prove it if they can't hang on to the football.
Sure. Intriguing game as well, Sunday afternoon. Ravens playing the Chargers in San Diego. Obviously, both teams got off to a good start. I think there are a lot of people that seem to think San Diego is just going to run away with the AFC West. Do you subscribe to that? And if you do, might this be one of the few opportunities they have to actually lose a home game this year?
I don't think they're going to run away with it. I mean, San Diego has proven they don't run too far from anyone. I mean, now, maybe when they get into the playoffs, they seem to have their share of surprises for teams, but they make it very hard on themselves to even get into the playoffs. One of my favorite stats of the week, the Baltimore Ravens last week against Kansas City. I know it's Kansas City, but still, 501 yards of total offense. Their offense ran 85 plays against the Chiefs.
Wow.
I mean, that's not the thing with Baltimore. Now, let's put that in perspective. In last year's postseason, 3 playoff games, the Ravens had 695 total yards.
Mm.
That's an average of about 230 a game.
Right.
So, again, it is Kansas City, and there's a lot to be said for that. But on the other hand, 500 total yards is 500 total yards. So if San Diego plays defense, especially like they did in the first quarter against Oakland and struggled against that running game, they're going to have their hands full. Right now, San Diego does not look like a really good football team in the holes. They still have Phillip Rivers. They still have Sproles and Tomlinson. Tomlinson, I don't know if he's going to play this week. Capable receivers. But they lost some offensive linemen the other night, and defensively, they up front at least, aren't making the same impact they were a couple of years ago.
Right. Let me jump ahead to a game in the NFC, because a couple of teams that also won in opening week seem to be in a pretty good stride right now for this early stage of the season. Saints playing at the Eagles, a 1 o'clock Eastern time game on Sunday. Will the Saints have any sort of staying power at all this season?
Well, that scored last week against Detroit. And Detroit, of course, got a fumble recovery in there and et cetera, et cetera. But that sounds like what you've been getting from the Saints for about 3 years now, 45-27. You could mark that up. I mean, they're an over dream, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't play great defense. Their offense is prolific. Drew Brees threw 6 touchdown passes last week.
Boy, he was a fantasy player's absolute star last week.
Oh, no doubt about it. But these are the kind of games last year that, you know, the Saints had a tough time winning 2 in a row last year. Now, they didn't do a lot of losing 2 in a row. I think they might have done it once. But they were, you know, they were like Coney Island as far as their track record. But, you know, they would have a great all performance and then go to Washington and lose. Then they would go on the, you know, they were terrible on the road last year. So up and down, so unpredictable. You know, they have an opportunity here, and Philly played great defense, aggressive defense last week against Carolina. They have an opportunity here to make a little statement about where their program's going, okay? And I'm not saying they need to win, but they can't lay an egg in Philadelphia. That's all I'll say, especially since it looks like it's going to be, well, let me see, it could be Donovan, Jeff, Kevin, Michael, George, Paul, Ringo.
Yeah.
I think it looks like it's going to be Kevin Cobb, obviously,
right,
with Jeff Garcia waiting in the wings. But
then Michael Vick's only another week away.
And Michael Vick's another week away, but at least we know he's not a factor this week. And we don't even know what Michael Vick's necessarily going to be. Is he going to be a quarterback? Is he going to be in a wildcat option? Is he going to line out wide, et cetera, et cetera? But the bottom line is this. The Saints need to get out of this rut that they've been in for a couple of years where they're, you know, they're too unpredictable. They need to develop some consistency. They got a little running game last week with Mike Bell. And a little balance, and that helped Drew Brees last week. There's no doubt about it. But they can't go into Philly and lay an egg. That's all I'll say.
Right. I'm going to jump back to the AFC and the team that should be and deserves to be top team overall in the NFL right now, and the Steelers. They opened up, obviously, with a big Thursday night win against Tennessee. I thought it was impressive. And they get to go to Chicago and take on a Bears team that's wounded in a lot of ways right now.
Yeah, I mean, let's. What could else have gone wrong? I mean, I guess O'Leary's cow could have kicked over the lantern again.
Yep, kind of seems
and
like it. Doesn't
started
it?
That yep. whole thing again, huh?
Yep.
You know, they lose Urlacher. Desmond Clark is now out. Jay Cutler throws four interceptions. I will say this: I was very impressed with Chicago's defensive line play. And you know, we love to laugh at certain people and point fingers and so on. Do anybody know who the defensive line coaches for the Chicago Bears right now?
For the Bears?
Yeah.
Not right offhand, no.
That would be Rod Marinelli, head coach.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
The head coach of the 0-16 Lions.
Yeah, I actually, during the game last week, wasn't there a reporter bid or something? Was it an Andrew?
I think
Andrew
or
somebody
so.
Did that, yeah, right.
Right, and let me tell you something. That was a very, very aggressive show, and they really kept Aaron Rodgers on his heels. I know the safety was a sack by a safety, Daniel Manning, but I thought their defensive line play was terrific the other night.
Yeah.
So it just shows you, you know, sometimes you can do it all, and sometimes you're really good at certain things. And, you know, and that with that kind of defensive line play, they will give the Steelers problems because the Steelers aren't blowing anybody away with their offensive line play and certainly their running game. But, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, incredibly resourceful. His receivers, resourceful. Here's what I'll say about Pittsburgh in that game the other night. 3 years ago, that Steeler team, even with Bill Cowher as the coach, who was a great coach for them,
mm-hmm.
3 years ago, if you had told me they rushed for 36 yards, turn over the ball three times, and Big Ben gets sacked four times, they lose the game. Okay? This time they come back and win a game in which they beat the team that had the best record in the NFL last year. So I say that because, and so much of this goes about the Patriots, the tie-in, and I'm not saying that because I'm on the Patriots network right now. The idea of situational football and the idea of knowing what to do when you have to do it
mm-hmm.
is absolutely key. That's how you win football games. You can overpower people, and that's great, but sometimes you're not always going to overpower people. Steelers were getting beat at the line of scrimmage last week. There was no doubt about it, and they had to find a different way to win the game. And they did. Remember, last year when they went into Tennessee and got dominated by that defensive front.
Right.
31-14, Ben got beat up, receivers got beat up. It was a whole different story. It wasn't just because they were playing at home. They played a different way. They found a way to offset the Titans' strength in that game.
They did. They absolutely did. And I think that's one of the reasons why they deserve to be where they are right now in terms of the pecking order in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, I'm old school like you are, and, you know, the defending champ deserves to be up at the top until Sunday.
Well, I'm always regardless of, you know, listen, if Arizona would have turned around and won the Super Bowl last year, which they were 3 minutes away from doing it, I'm an enormous champions until the throne person.
Yep.
Okay. And, you know, there are no – I know ESPN.com does them, and all due respect to my colleagues. There really aren't any official power rankings in the NFL.
Right.
I mean, you go by the standings. It's different in college because you go by the rankings.
Sure.
But if you were going to do it until they're knocked off, they are the champions.
They deserve
and they,
to be there.
They just do it different way. They do it a different way, that's
absolutely.
All. And, you know, I'm not a fan of how Bruce Arians runs his offense in terms of running game and so on. I'm a little more traditionalist like you are, and eventually that'll catch up with you because eventually you can't drop back 53 and 54 times. I know we'll talk about the Patriots in a little while.
Yeah.
When you're that one-dimensional, it's eventually going to cost you. But you know what's ironic about that game, and we'll get off of this? When it was all said and done, how would you know that Tennessee only ran the ball two more times than Pittsburgh did that entire evening.
I would not have guessed that.
Now, they got 50 more yards,
yeah,
but they had 25 carries and the Steelers had 23.
Wow. Wow. Let me touch briefly then, before we get to the Pats, on the Sunday night game. Giants playing at the Cowboys. Big NFC East battle. Cowboys get to debut the monstrosity of a new stadium. Why can't they lift that scoreboard so the punt doesn't come into play?
I don't know. I don't know how it's anchored or anything. I mean, thank God Rainer Guy's not kicking anymore, because he would nail it on purpose.
Every time.
Know?
Every time.
And he said he was going to, for people who don't know the story, when the Pro Bowl was played in the Superdome one year before mm-hmm. it rotated to Hawaii, and of course Pro Bowl's in Miami this year.
Right.
Different topic for a different time.
Right.
But Ray Guy announced that I'm going to hit the bottom of the scoreboard, and gosh darn it, he did. And they, I believe, did raise it after that. Now, of course, that was in an exhibition game,
mm-hmm.
Pro Bowl. I'll call the Pro Bowl an exhibition game because it's not a preseason game.
Right.
The kid, A.J. Trapasso, did it in a preseason game. I don't know. I guess it would cost some money, but it's like no one wants to foot the blame for why the scoreboard is where it is. And, you know, there's the insistence of it by some people, it's, well, he hit it because he wanted to hit it. I guess we're going to find out Sunday just how much of a play. Listen, I think it'll be easier to hit one of the people in the stands with the ball because it's going to be over 100,000 people
mm-hmm.
at this game. I mean, I think when it's all said and done, they will shatter NFL attendance records, especially for regular season games. I believe all the highest attended games that are over 100,000 people are either Super Bowls or, believe it or not, preseason games down in Mexico.
Right. You know, that'll be an extraordinary weekend, I think, overall in the state of Texas, only because the Cowboys will have 100,000-plus on Sunday night. The Longhorns are going to have 100,000-plus on Saturday night playing mm-hmm. Texas Tech. That's pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, and then you would have to wonder where everybody else is.
They're all either in Austin or Arlington, one or the other. That's it.
You know, if you wanted to vandalize cars that night, you'd know where to go.
My goodness, no kidding.
Those two kids who went up to Leotis McKelvin's house, they would have a field day in Texas.
You're not kidding.
Let's leave that where it may, by the way.
Okay, yeah,
so.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. All right, then Pats and Jets. I won't spend a lot of time on the Giants-Cowboys. That's another league, another time. Pats and Jets on Sunday. Everybody around here seems to think exactly the same way as I think we all did before the Bills game. Like, you know, the Patriots should win this one, mm-hmm. you know, and should win this one even relatively easily. I am the one naysayer, and I think that the Jets have not only a legitimate chance, but I think that they'll actually, I think they'll pull it off on Sunday.
And you're the one naysayer?
I am the one naysayer.
Then I guess you and I are going out to dinner soon, so.
Really?
Yeah, and not only do I think they will win, I think they need to win if I'm the New York Jets. Because they have an opportunity here. If you saw the way they played, and again, I think it had more to do with Houston, but you can't knock their aggressiveness. I think New England's defense certainly has some issues, and it's certainly attackable. They have lost 8 straight games at home to the New England Patriots.
Correct.
And coaches around this league will tell you, that those are the kind of things that you point out with a young football team. Those are those milestones. Those are achievements that you point out to football teams and say, listen, if we do this and we do that, we haven't done this, we haven't done that, it would be an enormous confidence boost for that entire program. Now, of course, the Jet fans I know, and you know who they are,
mm-hmm.
would have them clinching a home field advantage if they win Sunday
mm-hmm.
in the AOC. I'm not saying that. But you have lost 8 straight games to this team in your own building. If not now, when? And I think it's a really good opportunity. And I'll ask you this, John.
Sure.
Watching the game the other night, Matt Light looks like a different football player than he did even 2 years ago, as far as his pass blocking and so on. Does there seem to be any concern with the Patriots' offensive line? Now, we know what happened in the Super Bowl. Last year, I think a lot of people chalked up all the sacks up to Matt Castle's lack of experience. But even though they only gave up one sack the other night, they didn't look like they were totally in sync. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
No, I don't think that there's a whole lot of concern with the offensive line. I think everybody feels like that was one of the reasons why they made a guy like Russ Hochstein, who's very valuable as a do-it-all kind of guy, up and down the line. That's why they traded him away, because they felt like they were in good, solid shape with the front five guys.
Well, they seem very happy. You know, you saw it the other night. It's Sebastian Vollmer, the rookie, who made more than one appearance in the game the other night.
Yeah.
And so on. He seems to be the swing man.
Well, he's the kind of the new Hochstein, to be honest with you. They're gonna move him from side to side a little bit, I think.
Right. Right. Well, I was just curious. That's just from a casual point of view, and I'm not trying to call out Matt Light. That's certainly not my intention.
No, and I think, you know, Matt's had his problems, and they've been well chronicled, and, you know, he's obviously had a couple of decent years, and, you know, and I think that the pocket did collapse a little around Brady, and part of that was because I do believe that Buffalo made a concerted effort to put some heat on him, and I think we saw Tom get a little jittery, certainly through the first half, maybe even first three quarters of that game.
Well, that was my concern with Brady to begin with. It wasn't not to knock the offensive line, but that natural instinct of anybody who gets injured the way he did. It happened with Carson Palmer, and you saw it early on, throwing flat-footed and not stepping into the throws. Now, once he got into that groove and got used to things again, there it came. You know, to be honest with you, it took Carson Palmer half a season.
Yep.
Tom Brady took a half of football. But that was my only concern. But I was just curious because – you know, a lot has been made last year about all the sacks they gave up. And again, the general consensus was it had a lot to do with Matt Castle's inexperience.
Mm-hmm.
But just watching some of the heat that went on the other day, I was just wondering your thoughts on that as well.
Well, I think it's also pretty clear that they really like Sebastian Vollmer a lot, and that he could be the, you know, heir apparent to take over at that spot on the line within the next couple of years.
Okay, you know? Well, Matt needs to drink some more of that water.
Something.
Yep. More wet water, and I do enjoy his commercials and all that. So
I'll make sure that he understands that.
Okay.
All right, very good. Russell, thanks for spending time with us again, as always. Have a great weekend. I'll look forward to visiting with you again next week.
For our sakes, I hope we're both wrong about something.
Yes. I think that goes without saying.
Yes.
It goes without saying.
I like living in this area.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Well, especially around there, aren't Patriots fans?
Especially around.
Isn't it all Patriots and Giants fans still around ESPN?
We're a three-tier nation here.
Okay. Patriots, Giants, Jets, yeah.
Patriots, Giants, Jets. Right. And at any one time, you all know where they all are.
Yep, that's true.
You know, it's like light bright. So the area just kind of beams.
Gotcha.
When they're around.
Have a great weekend.
You too, John. Talk to you soon.
You got it. That's Russell Baxter again, who's the NFL research coordinator for ESPN. He does the talking in the ears of Boomer and TJ and the guys on the set on all the ESPN Sunday NFL and Monday NFL shows. He is doing all the research and equipping the guys with all the facts. Yeah, absolutely. Not that those guys, I never mean to say that those guys aren't smart and that they don't know football. They do. But, you know, Russell is the one person, I've said this before, and for those that don't know it, I will say it again. Russell is the one person at ESPN, amongst the thousands of employees that they have, whose job is the National Football League 365 days per year. He's the one. They got one guy who does nothing but football, nothing but pro football, nothing but the NFL every day of the year. He's the one guy. And he talks to you every Thursday right here inside the playbook. All right. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's how you reach us here in the program. Get some emails in. We got some conference calls to get to as well. Coming up inside the playbook.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush. But you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains!
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank Football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game, but, 5 yards,
but
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the change, patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A. Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2009. Bank of America Corporation.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football, 3 Super Bowl championships, endless memories.
It's good! It's good! At a Vinatieri!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies. Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty. And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Running down a dream inside the playbook here for a Thursday. Pats, Jets coming up Sunday. The Meadowlands and East Rutherford. Todd sent an email for Russell here. He says, are NFL teams required to list players as out on the Wednesday and Thursday injury report, or is it just practice participation report? It's just practice participation report. Todd, I could answer that one for you. It's just practice participation. So they're not required to do diddly that they don't want to do, unfortunately. That was the NFL acquiescing to the whole, privacy issue in terms of medical reasons in the National Football League from a couple of years ago. But it's just a participation report. John in South Carolina says, if you rewatch the play, Wilfork hitting Trent Edwards, the play might have ended with intentional grounding. The ball landed at the feet of the center, so it might have been a sack after all. Could have been, but unfortunately it wasn't. I mean, wouldn't surprise me the fact that they missed the call on the tackle that Wilfork had. They would also miss a potential intentional grounding on the play. That was a bust. And I think we all have to realize that, yes, officials, believe it or not, are human, and they do make mistakes. That, my friends, was a mistake, without a doubt. Dale sends this email from Bedford, and he says, John, I have to agree with you. I'm sorry to say that this time because I think the Jets will be there to play, and there will be a lot of support for them. That won't hurt the Pats any. They've heard it all before, but it will help the Jets. Regarding Bill Belichick against rookies, remember that the adage is that he doesn't let them beat him twice. The first time around, unless the Pats staff has some idea what to do that will mess up the new quarterback, he may have a game like Pennington had back in December of 2002. The Jets do have a very good O and D lines. Pats lines aren't quite there yet, and so Dale says Jets 28, Pats 20. And Ryan's still a jerk.
He's a jackass.
Meanwhile, I think it's great we have a drop from the President of the United States, by the way.
That's you like good. That? I'm very
I
up
like
on
that.
Current events.
I think you are totally spot on. Meanwhile, someone took another whack at Maroney on that short yardage play. Funny how people's prejudice against player gets pervasive. Let me remind everyone that Sammy Morris was in the block for Maroney on that play, and he lost against air. Meanwhile, Maroney went hard off tackle into three white shirts. I insist that play was not his fault. Give me more Maroney, even if it is the whole first half, and get us a fullback. Sammy's the smallest back they have except Falk. Did you really think that he could run block? Bah. Well, I don't think he's the smallest back they have except for Falk. I would say that Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis, even though he was inactive, is a little bit smaller. Nevertheless, I agree with the fullback point. And you'll notice that when they're in power formation situations, who lines up at fullback? Have you noticed? Benjamin Watson. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Yeah, I do think they could also use a fullback, Dale. And I appreciate the email. Last week against the Houston Texans, the Jets were 10 of 18. 10 of 18 on third down conversions. Pretty extraordinary. Pretty good. Very solid. Most of those conversions came through the air. And, of course, that would be Mark Sanchez, their rookie quarterback out of Southern Cal. Now, he did make a couple of throws that were probably ill-advised at best, under pressure. He did have one picked off early in the fourth quarter. Certainly could have changed the momentum. But all in all, you'd have to say it's a pretty top day for the rookie. And he did it against a team that, at least we thought, had a pretty effective pass rush. And the Jets' offensive line, for the most part, did a good job of neutralizing that Houston pass rush. He's going to get to go against a secondary that's still in a little bit of transition for the Patriots, with guys like Bodden and Sean Springs and Darius Butler back there. Throw Pat Chung in there if you like. Certainly Brandon Merriweather seems to be coming into his own now as a solid performer in the NFL, and that's probably a good thing. But most of the guys back there in the secondary are still finding their way. This is another huge day for the Patriots front seven. And whether or not they can supply any pressure at all on that Jets offensive line and against Mark Sanchez. We're going to find out how well these Patriots corners can cover. No doubt about it. Jericho Cotchery is a vastly underrated receiver. I think most of us can agree to that point. Chancey Stuckey seems to be developing as well. A lot of people like Dustin Keller as a potential breakout player at tight end. Jets have some weapons here is what I'm saying. Patriots defense will have their hands full. If you're curious to know how Mark Sanchez is handling all of this through just his second week as an NFL pro, we will get to it here in just a moment. We'll let you listen in to Mark Sanchez and his conversation with members of the Patriots media.
Hey, how we doing?
Good, Mark. How are you?
Great, thanks.
Mark, what are your thoughts on, obviously Bill Belichick has quite the reputation as a defensive guru. What are your thoughts as a rookie quarterback on facing a Belichick defense?
Oh, well, you know, he's a renowned defensive coach, him and Coach Pease, and they are great at scheming. They know how to give quarterbacks fits and disrupt game plans, so we need to be prepared for the best, and they have the personnel to play any kind. They have a great situation going over there, and they've been tough for a long time since I've known them. So it's gonna be a fun matchup for us, an exciting matchup, a big challenge, and we're excited about it.
Mark, do you have a sense of the Jets, the intensity of the Jets-Patriots rivalry? Has that hit you yet?
You know, I think it's one of those things that I'll come to know here very shortly. A big-time divisional opponent. Games carry a lot of weight in this league, and it's my job to get that sense of this rivalry and understand that I need to be at my best, just like every week, you know, and we want to build this game up, but at the same time, this is...
Mark,
Mark, if you can hear us, you're cutting in and out. We're having a hard time on this end.
Hear me?
Yeah, we did.
Did you lose me?
Yeah, we lost.
Okay, so what did I get? I said they're a formidable opponent. These games carry a lot of weight because it's a divisional game, and it's up to me to just keep learning along and listening to these veterans and understand how important this matchup is to us, but at the same time not, you know, get carried away and make it bigger than it should be. I just need to play, you know, a football game and be smart and learn from the mistakes last week, correct them, and keep improving on what I did well.
You said that you don't want to get carried away and look at this game as bigger than what it is, but yet I think one of your teammates was quoted as saying you're going to treat this like a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I don't even know what, you know, that's one guy's opinion. If that gets him fired up. But, you know, for me, I don't know what the Super Bowl feels like. So the Patriots do, and they know how to play these kind of at home, I understand. So, you know, all I know is that this is a phenomenal team coming into our place, and we need to play well at home. And they know how to play on the road. They know how to play all the time. So this is a great team.
Mark, your coach said that he was not basically hired to kiss Bill Belichick's Super Bowl rings. Do you like that attitude from Rex? Do you welcome that kind of comment?
Oh, you know, that's just the way Coach Ryan is. And, you know, it's not up to me to judge anything like that. You know, that's just the mentality he wants us to have. We want to be tough you know, we want to be as physical as possible. You know, he didn't want us bowing down to anyone is basically how he explained it to us. And that's, you know, that's the kind of mentality that every team should have in this league. And it's obvious on Sundays because teams come after you. And that's what we want, especially in a divisional game like this. So it's neither here nor there for me to judge what Coach says. But, you know, that's the guy I'm following. You know, we need to take on his kind of attitude as well.
Mark, having watched the Patriots' defense on film and now without one of its best players, Gerard Mayo, I mean, what do you see? What's the threat they pose to you?
Well, I know I've seen a lot of great athletes, guys like Will Fork in the middle. I mean, man, is he a great run stopper, and he does well in the pass rush as well. You know, Mayo was a big-time playmaker for them and seemed to be all over the field. You know, anywhere the ball was at the end of the film, he was right there, either making the tackle or assisting on a tackle, you know, tipping the ball. And, you know, people are talking about, oh, they lost all their great players and Bruschi and Vrabel and Rodney Harrison. But this kind of team and the kind of coaching staff they have, they're the kind of team that rebuilds and plugs another guy into their system and they just know how to play. And they draft the right players, the right attitude, with the right attitudes, and they know how to play in big games. That's a tribute to their coaching staff. They're a phenomenal group, and well-schooled in the secondary, especially Springs. You know, he's a tough player. He's smart. You know, he's been around a long time, and he really knows how to play. He knows how to read quarterbacks. So it's my job to play at my very best and be smart with the football. And, you know, this is a phenomenal group we're playing.
Mark, how much do you think your learning curve has been accelerated because you practice on a daily basis against such a talented defense?
I think, you know, that's really helped over the summer, and I didn't understand what, you know, how much it would help until we started playing in these regular season games and understanding how difficult our defensive scheme is to try and play against while you're trying to learn an offense. I mean, it was tough. Now, those summer practices were not fun. You know, I was having a great time being in the NFL and you know, practicing with these all pros and, you know, pro bowler guys, and then I'd come out here and get picked off all summer, and it was just difficult. But now I'm starting to understand as I'm getting our offense down a little bit here and there, little by little each week, how difficult that was and what a challenge that was as a rookie. And then you go into a regular game, and when you get a vanilla defense in the preseason, you know, you feel a lot better about yourself. But at the same time, then you go to Houston, and you know, the preseason's over. So it's almost like this up and down roller coaster, and I'm trying to stay right in the middle and just be smart with the football and take things as they come. But, you know, our defense is a phenomenal group as well, and it's going to be a great matchup for them. You know, they got a great offense coming into town here, and they sure know how to play. So they've been great. They've been successful against a lot of defenses, so hopefully we can hold up.
Mark, do you guys look at this as a measuring stick game for your team?
I don't know about that. I think we want to feel like this is an internal measuring stick each week. You know, we want to look at our film and be about us. You know, we don't want to put too much emphasis on the opponent. We definitely respect every opponent we play, especially this team, but I don't feel like we have to measure up against one particular team. And you know, that's it's about us competing every day and making each other better, and then, you know, trying to put on a show every Sunday. So, you know, I don't know if that answers your question. I'm sorry if it doesn't.
No, it does. It does. Thank you.
Yeah.
You don't have a lot of, you don't have any comparison, obviously, in terms of NFL coaches, but how would you describe Coach Ryan as a head coach?
Oh, you know, he doesn't hide anything under the rug. You know, he's direct and blunt force trauma, I guess you would call it, because he tells you exactly how it is. And, you know, he doesn't hide anything. When you throw a pick, when you make a good play, he'll let you know. And the most encouraging thing is he's got a lot of faith in our offense and our defense, our special teams, and he's conveyed that to us, and he's a great leader. And, you know, he's someone you want to play for. He knows how to take care of his players. And, you know, this is all coming from a rookie, so this is all I know so far. You know, but I think he's been great. And, you know, I love playing for him. He's, you know, when I got picked off last week, he was the first one there to pick me up and to say, hey, man, we're not letting up at all. You're going to play small with the football. It was one bad throw, and don't sweat it. You know, we're still going to throw the football. Don't think we're just going to clam up here and you know, run the ball the rest of the game. We're going to be smart, but we're still going to air it out, so don't you sweat it at all. And that was very encouraging to me, so I appreciated that.
Mark,
last one here.
Mark, what's the biggest thing that surprised you having watched the Patriots on film? Is it their coverages? A lot of players have said that they run a lot of different coverages.
This is the last answer I got for you guys, okay? But, yeah, their coverages are unique. They do some things a little unorthodox that you don't see very often, and then they have the athletes to play in those schemes. So just when you think you might have a wide-open route, they have somebody trapping you, running underneath it, or safety coming down and picking off your pass. So they do a great job of giving quarterback fits, and they play well together. You know, you don't think of the Patriots as just one, you know, superstar that makes every single tackle. They're really well in their schemes, and they're a great team, not just a bunch of individuals. So it's they're a special group, and we're excited to play.
That is Mark Sanchez, the quarterback for the New York Jets, first-year pro, of course, rookie out of Southern Cal, visiting with members of the Patriots media. I don't know, in listening to his conversation there, did you get the impression that he was a little bit more mature than, say, his rookie experience would indicate? He certainly is well-schooled in interviews. Maybe that's because he's a byproduct of the media attention that he gets in Southern California, or that he got in Southern California and nationally as a, you know, quarterback for the Trojans. I would also think that he's probably fairly well schooled in how to handle questions like that through what Pete Carroll certainly schooled him on over the years, and his assistant coaches and whomever else did their you know, media training at Southern Cal. And make no mistake about it, the big time programs do that. He just sounds like a veteran quarterback, and I'm really impressed. I'm much more impressed now than I was, say, 2 weeks ago before I ever saw him throw a pass, really, a meaningful pass in the NFL. But after watching the game last Sunday and then having an opportunity to listen and read a little bit about the game this week and how he's approaching things, and, you know, the Jets aren't afraid really to throw him in there, so to speak. And there was a good point made in this conversation with the Patriots media that you heard about, you know, how he has to go up against a Jets defense every week in practice, how that sort of brings him along. And I think that was an excellent point. Fact is that he's going up against a pretty good defense to get him prepared for the rigors of the league and prepared for what he might face, especially on the field this Sunday in the Patriots. Now, of course, the X factor to all of this is, you know, what he will see in terms of lining up schematics, blitzes, coverage, formations. I mean, you certainly would have to expect Belichick and the Patriots to throw a lot of different looks. But don't think for a minute that they're not preparing for that, because I'm certain they are. They just may not know exactly what the Patriots will throw. So because of that, maybe you find that the Jets aren't quite as aggressive on offense early in the game. Maybe you find them relying on Thomas Jones or Leon Washington a little bit more early in the game until Sanchez has a chance to see what the Patriots might be presenting. Does that make sense to anybody? That's kind of what I'm thinking, that he'll sort of pick and choose his opportunities, that it might not be a, you know, pin your ears back, full bore, aggressive approach on offense. And then, you know, after he gets his feet wet, you know, a couple of series, maybe even a quarter or two, then you start to see him try to pick apart a Patriots secondary, especially if the Patriots are not getting pressure on him. That is a huge, huge key to the game on Sunday. The Patriots front four, or front whomever, they must get pressure on Sanchez. I frankly think the Patriots should just blitz. I think it should be a blitzkrieg. I think they should come after him every play. Now, I don't think they will, because that's just not their that's just not their style. But, you know, they certainly should come after him and come after him hard in opportunity like that, because they've got to get pressure on him and force him to make early decisions. Because then I think you can force the rookie into mistakes. And then if you can confuse him after you've blitzed, you fall back and you give him some different coverage looks and disguise some things, which I'm certain the Patriots will undoubtedly try at some stage, then I think you got a chance to win this football game, because to me that's the difference. I think the Patriots will score. I think the Patriots will score on the Jets. I do believe they will. I think the Jets' defense is solid. I think their whole Baltimore scheme that they brought with them, that coaching staff brought with them from Baltimore, is effective. And I think that you know, the Patriots will still manage to move the football. They'll have a week under the belt. They can probably still put anywhere from 24 to 27 up on the board. And I think when in the opening hour of the program, and then in the tail end of PFW in progress, when the guys asked me what I thought, you know, I said Jets 27 to 24. I'm going to stick with that, because I think it'll probably come down to a last second scenario or a last minute scenario anyway. The question here is whether or not the Patriots defense, to me, can stop the Jets offense. And if they can get them in a few more three and outs than the defense forced Trent Edwards and Buffalo into this past Monday, which I believe was, what, one? Then I think the Patriots can win the football game. But they're going to have to do better than what they did this past Monday night. Sanchez is a better quarterback. Jets are a better offense. Jets are a better team, period. Injury and practice participation report is out a little bit early today in advance of the 4 o'clock Eastern time hour. We have one change from yesterday's report. Steven Neal, a limited participation. He had full participation yesterday, but limited participation today with a back injury. Could be his back spasms were giving him problems again. Gerard Mayo obviously did not practice. He has been seen in the locker room. He has a brace on his knee, and he's on crutches, but he's not spoken to anyone. Limited participation still for Dan Connolly, Julian Edelman, Rob Ninkovich, Myron Pryor, Matt Slater, Dalis Thomas, Wes Welker, and Terrence Wheatley. Full participation for Tom Brady, same as yesterday. Jets did not have any change with the exception of Damian Woody in their participation report from yesterday's practice. Woody, they don't have anything listed, so it doesn't say whether he participated or not. Limited yesterday, and then nothing is listed today. It's blank. He was out sick yesterday, but limited participation from Chris Jenkins, Wallace Wright, Puha, the defensive lineman, and then Kellen Clemens, Sean Green, Mike DeVito, Brian Thomas, and Jamal Westerman all practiced today for the Jets. So that kind of brings you up to date on those things. Paul sends this email. What the Patriots need to do for a win against the Jets: protect Brady on blitzes, keep extra people to protect Brady from an all-out blitz, and enough time for him to find an open receiver. I'll buy that. I think they got to do that every week. Utilize Chris Baker in passing plays. Keep Ben Watson as a blocker. Use Randy Moss, Wes Welker, Chris Baker. Okay, that's actually not a bad suggestion. We've seen Watson line up as the H-back or as a fullback on occasion, as I mentioned earlier. Activate and utilize Ben Jarvis Green Ellis as a running back. He's been much more productive so far this year. Like in the preseason, he seems to always have positive yards and can catch the ball as well. But I think you already touched on one important point there, Paul. It was preseason. It's not to say he couldn't do it in the regular season. Number four, if they need someone to help them while Gerard Mayo is out, sign Junior Seau for 6 weeks. I know he's 40, but he's very fit and he has the experience. Seau said this morning on local radio on WEEI that he would consider coming back, but not until later in the season. Number five, utilize Edelman in gadget plays like the Wildcat. Don't you think they kind of find that predictable? And number six, defense must blitz, make sure they tackle, make sure they don't give up the big play. Well, I will agree with that one. B-Lo is in the house. What's up, Brian?
Junior Seau is like Brett Favre. Until a complete NFL season goes by without him being with the team, I'm assuming that Junior Seau will play football. Junior Seau is a little easier to deal with than Brett Favre, I find.
Right.
But I would be stunned. I'd be far more surprised if Junior Seau doesn't play football for the Patriots this year than if he does.
I think I would tend to agree with that.
And what took place the other day with Mayo's injury, even though it doesn't seem to be a season-long injury, they weren't very deep at that position anyways.
No, I think I would actually tend to agree with that.
Junior Seau coming in around Halloween, I think, is just
Sense.
That's just what's going to happen.
And you know, even though I know he didn't want to say it, because I listened to most of the interview this morning on local radio here, but frankly, I was reading between the lines in a lot of what he said, and I think he's preparing to come back. Now, it's just a matter of when.
It's funny, because some of these guys who are on the fence and all that, even when they say, no, there's no way, often there's still a way that they come back.
Sure.
When it's a guy like Seau who admits that, yeah, you know, I'd like to come back, I think there's a chance, then it's a definite to me. It's a definite.
I think he'd like to have one more shot.
Yeah.
One more shot. You know,
he's
turning 40. I think he'd like to have, I think this, you know, this could very well be it. Obviously, Brewski already made that call.
Yeah.
Seau still feels like he's got a little little gas left in the tank. Now that Mayo is out, you know, the interesting point is do they ask him before Mayo is ready to return, say, around the midway point of the season?
It's all about keeping him fresh. I mean, you don't want to give him more, you don't want him to be around probably for more than 8 to 10 games, because then you hope that there's playoffs too. But, yeah, you know, it's a great question. And, hey, between Brewski, who was on the ESPN set when the injury happened, he was yards away. He could have come back. No, just kidding
really?
About that.
Just, I mean, here, take a helmet. Here's some pads. Teddy, come on out.
Could they have
You're activated.
They could make a halftime transaction, right? I mean, the league office is open, right? Bring him back in. Put, you know,
wouldn't
that
be
know.
An unbelievable got, story if something got, like that ever happened?
They've got 10 offensive linemen. They could probably spare an offensive lineman, put one on IR, who knows, and bring Brewski back.
I know.
Good fodder, as
it is. Good fodder. All right, what's coming up on the fantasy lowdown?
Well, you know what? It's always interesting to see who had big week one performances that just simply won't last through the season, or maybe some sleepers from week one who will. And going over the prime performers and taking your emails. We already got a couple emails, webradio@patriots.com. So lots of material to get to. Looking forward to it. And John, email me your fantasy questions anytime. Anytime.
Hey, did you start Drew Brees last week at quarterback?
I did start Drew Brees.
Oh, you're loving it.
As we
six
call
touchdowns.
As we call in fantasy lingo, a must start, John.
Ooh, man, that was impressive.
Unfortunately, he doesn't play Detroit every week, so he might only have five touchdowns.
I don't do a lot of fantasy stuff, but I have to admit, when I saw that he was throwing six up on the board against Detroit, I said, oh, man, that's huge for somebody.
Drew Brees and Adrian Peterson are guys we'd put in the must start category.
Yeah, probably so.
Adrian Peterson, by the way, and we'll get to this, plays the Lions this week. Could we see the first 300-yard rushing game in the NFL?
No, but you're certainly, I think, you're probably going to see two Bills plus.
The only reason we won't see 300 yards from him is because by halftime it'll be so out of hand, all their backups
Could
will
be
in the play.
Could be. Yeah. All right. And will I see you next Tuesday inside the playbook?
Oh, we'll be around.
Okay, you'll be around?
We'll make sure that happens.
Okay, got to make sure. You know, got to keep you
You lying your ass off.
All right, Brian Lowe, Fantasy Lowdown, coming up here in just a couple of moments. That does it for this edition of the Playbook. I hope I'm wrong. I'm the lone person, the lone soul in here on Patriots.com radio that says the Jets are going to win. I know. Brian, see, he's even shocked. But Russell Baxter from ESPN also agreed.
He agrees.
He agreed.
Oh, well, he knows. You know what you're talking about, too.
You know, I hope I'm wrong. And I'm going to give you every opportunity to say I told you so next week, same Pat's time, same Pat's channel. See you Tuesday.